From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 83, Rob Parker.
Welcome into the podcast. I'm your host, Rob Parker. What a show we have for you today. We will talk to former Major League outfielder Herm Winningham, who played for that 1990 championship Cincinnati Reds team. Also, we'll catch up with the red-hot Dodgers with David Vasse, who is the Dodgers reporter for AM 570 LA Sports in Los Angeles. That and much more. Let's go.
To lead off, it's getting robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball. Number one.
Former Major League slugger Gary Sheffield said he doesn't watch baseball anymore. That might be harsh, but I do get it. The game has changed a lot. And here's the quote he told CBS Sports Radio. Quote, "I don't watch baseball at all. It was kind of forced. I was kind of forced to watch baseball because I was working for TBS. And so I had to remember, really find out who these players were. I'll tell you a secret now. I never watched games during the season. I would be educated on it when I got there. It's not something I could watch based on what I'm seeing because I'll be a complainer. This is the first time I ever said that out loud, but I'm just truly disappointed with what I watch." Gary Sheffield and a lot of players, former players, are saying they don't recognize the game anymore. And we talk about it. I don't think it's over the top. It's all about home runs, strikeouts. It's just the game has changed a lot. Analytics have changed the game. And there's not enough action on the base pass. It's either all or nothing, whatever happened to hit and run and run and hit and stealing bases. And it's a different game. There's no doubt about it. But baseball's not alone. The NBA, we see the same thing. It's about a dunk or a three-pointer. I mean, the mid-range game is done. It's totally different. You can't defend anybody, can't touch anybody. Football has changed. All the great running backs wouldn't even play today. Barry Sanders, Jim Brown, would there even be a place for those guys? All they want to do is throw the football on every down. So analytics have really affected all the sports, including baseball. I know baseball needs to think about it. One thing I would do if I was the commissioner is I would change the shift. I think the shift takes away a lot of hits, takes a lot of guys off base. I think you should only be allowed to have two players on each side of the second base bag. I think that would at least allow some of those hits because everybody has hitting patterns. And so many hits, even when guys make contact, go to spots where there's three or four infielders. And I just think that that is a big thing that could easily be corrected and open up some of the field for guys to get hits.
Number two.
Mets shortstop Francisco Lindor is struggling. That's right, big time. And I wonder if New York Mets fans are a little verklempt and a little upset. He's only batting 171, no home runs, one double. It has been a struggle despite, you know, the big contract he signed before the season started. The Mets were excited. Their new owner, Steve Cohen, you know, reached deep in his pockets for Lindor. And I just think it's too early for people to automatically think this isn't going to work out. He's had a tremendous career thus far. Granted, his batting average has gone down every year, but he's a lifetime 284 hitter coming into the season. He's done a lot of things that tell you he could be on a path to be a Hall of Fame shortstop if he continues. Sometimes playing in a new place, to start in a new league. There's a lot of other things that factor in. And guys do go through slumps. And there's no way you can look at 40 at-bats and have that negate the first six seasons in the major leagues and say that the 40 at-bats is more representative of the of his career than the six seasons when he's been solid and been an all-star. So I'm not going to jump on the panic wagon and say, oh my God, the Mets made a mistake and this is going to be a disaster. Let Lindor hit out of this slump. Let's see how this thing progresses. I say it's not a reason for concern.
Number three.
Major League Baseball players reacted to the George Floyd verdict in Minneapolis. And the Players Alliance, a nonprofit organization founded by a group of active and former Major League players with the goal of improving representation of Black Americans in baseball, issued a powerful statement after the verdict where former police officer Derek Chauvin was convicted on all three counts. Here is the statement from the Players Alliance. Quote, "We stand in support of today's decision to convict Derek Chauvin of second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter charges for the killing of George Floyd. While today's verdict doesn't begin to approach true justice, it's a step in the right direction towards course-correcting the disproportionate police violence against Black Americans." It continued, "George Floyd's murder was the spark that lit fire under millions of people of all races, creeds, and nationalities around the world who raised their voices against police violence and the racial injustices that exist in this country. That spark led the creation of the Players Alliance, allowing our players a platform to do the same. Today, we can continue to stroke these flames to fight for equal treatment and opportunities. If we neglect to turn these emotions into productive action, these tragic moments in history are destined to be repeated." There it is, part of the statement by the Players Alliance after the verdict in the George Floyd murder.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, now let's welcome in former Major League outfielder Herm Winningham, who played 9 years in the big leagues, primarily as a center fielder, broke in with the Mets, played for the Expos in Montreal, Cincinnati Reds, Boston Red Sox, and won a championship in 1990 with those Cincinnati Reds. Herm, welcome to the podcast, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine, Rob. Good to hear from you. Yeah, hey, glad you woke me on this thing. Nobody knows who I am now, you know. But thank you for inviting me.
No doubt, man. Come on, man. You played. Let's just start there in Cincinnati, that great championship team in 1990. What was that like with the characters, the players, even Marge Schott, the owner, Lou Piniella, the fiery manager?
Everybody was an individual. But it started in spring training, Rob. That's when you came over there at that time, too. It was Pete Rose's team. Fine. But we didn't have what I call discipline, you know, kind of thing. But when Pete got in trouble, here comes Lou. Lou was fiery. Lou had structure for us. He told us in spring training what your job was going to be. He got eight players going to play every day. He got five starters. And he gave you. Now, the role players like myself and Louis Quiñones and Griffin and Olson and Bragg, you know, we knew our jobs from day one. And we understood that from Luke. And the characters were unbelievable. I mean, it was funny watching Luke, you know, go off.
Right. Rob Dibble.
It was a fun team to be around.
Yeah, Rob Dibble, Chris Sabo, Barry Larkin, Eric Davis. Man. It was an incredible group of players. What, Herm, tell me about this. Playing in Cincinnati, for people who don't know, Cincinnati is one of the great baseball towns in this country. Yeah. People love baseball in Cincinnati. What was that like for you?
It was everywhere you went. You know, I don't care if you were in Kentucky, right? You were down anywhere in Ohio, there's baseball. They live and breathe Reds baseball. I mean, it's on every building. When there's a game, you can tell people go to work at 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever, you know, and then there's an afternoon game, businessman special, boom. They're done by 12, and they're walking to the ballpark, you know. And it's great because, you know, baseball's been in Cincinnati forever, you know, way back. So it's just carried down. I mean, you know, it's just one of those cities. It's just a small media market, but it's a baseball city.
Let's talk about this, too. You played for the Montreal Expos, and for a lot of the younger people listening to the podcast, they don't even know that Montreal had a baseball team. It's been so long. But what was that like, the international flavor? The Expos always have had one of the greatest baseball caps, right? The Expo, that
the Expo,
E on the front.
MLB, the Expo cap.
Yeah, no
doubt. I still got a couple of those. Everybody wants them. I said, nope, I even got my uniform. I can't wear it no more, but I still have my uniform. But those were, I enjoyed those years because they thought enough of me to, you know, trade for me in that trade with the Hubie Brooks, Floyd Yeomans, Mike Fitzgerald, for Gary Carter to the Mets. I was a starter there for a little while, you know, for a couple of years. And then, you know, because I had to play with Andre Dawson, which was, one of the best. But, I had Tim Raines, you know. I said, wow. Now, all before, I came up with Darryl Strawberry, you know,
yep. And
who became a great outfielder, you know. And playing in Montreal, as far as fans, they're great fans. They were baseball there also for a long time. Might not have been major league baseball, but they had a lot of minor leagues, you know, there. And you knew Jackie Robinson was, you know, started his minor league career, his professional career there. So, you know, but there, the fans, they know the game. They know that what's going on. It's just that it's a difference in culture as far as your food. But it's just the nightlife is great, you know, and it's just a little different. You feel it. You might not can put words to it, but you feel
right.
It.
Hey, Herm, let me ask you. Our guest is Herm Winningham, former major league outfielder, played for the Mets and the Expos, the Reds, and the Red Sox. But let me ask you about today's baseball. And you're a coach right now. You are head coach of the Orangeburg Wilkinson.
That's how long it's been. I am an assistant now at Calhoun County High School Baseball in St. Matthews, South Carolina. Coach Dukes Isgett is the head baseball coach. But that's where I'm at. I'm 10 miles from the high school that I was at, my alma mater.
Okay, so help me with this. Today's baseball, which is a lot of strikeouts or walks, is it as entertaining to you, or do you like this baseball? When you were coming up, if you struck out as many times as some of these guys, you would probably be in the minor leagues, wouldn't you?
Probably. You ran with Sheffield said, I can't watch it. It's a different baseball. I mean, it's not the baseball game. Baseball being played the way that baseball is supposed to be played. All right. If you had a batting average of .215 by May, the end of May, you think you'd still be there when I was there? No, you wouldn't be there. If your ERA was over 3 as a starter, you wouldn't be there. Okay?
Right.
The type of baseball they're playing, if you struck out 180 times in the first month, you have no chance of ever coming back.
No doubt.
You know?
I mean, no, that's
weird. And hold it. And then those guys are still in the big leagues, and they're making millions of dollars.
Right. No, it is definitely a different brand of baseball. Last thing, though,
analytics.
Please. I want to ask you, it is analytics. What about with you, with the kids? What do you guys teach on the high school level? Is it about contact? Is it about hit and run? What are you guys teaching
small
on that
ball,
level?
Little ball. Get them over, get them in. Hit behind the runner. Pull it when you have to. Get in the third. In the lead. They put a guy on second base.
extra innings. All right? Then put him on second.
Wrong. They very seldom you see him try to bunt the guy over. They try to hit a home run.
Right.
All right? My thing is, the way we were taught in the minor leagues, guy in front of you hit a double with no outs. Coach had to put on no sign.
Right.
You knew your job. If I was right-handed and I had a tough time with this pitcher, I was going to drop it down so I can get him to third. I don't care if he was the first place hitter, fourth place hitter, fifth. It doesn't matter. You was going to put it down. Right. Or you were going to hit it back up the middle, which is behind the runner, get him to third with one out.
No doubt. I know that's where we are in baseball, and we appreciate your insight and the stuff you're doing with the high school kids. Herm Winningham, a former Major League outfielder, joining us here on Inside the Parker. Herm, thanks so much, my man. Stay well. Great to talk to you.
Hey, Rob. Hey, I'm going to ask for a donation a little later on. All right, Rob. I appreciate it, my brother.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it, Herm.
All right, Rob. Okay.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Central. The analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
Anthony Masterson is his name. BS Analytics is his game. What do you got for me, Anthony?
When you're talking about scouting, usually a term you hear is five-tool player. Those tools are hit for average, hit for power, fielding, speed, and arm. Now, long a product of the dreaded eye test. With sabermetrics always evolving, we're now able to measure these tools to an awe-inspiring degree. One of the most special combos you can find is the power-speed combo. In years past, that metric has been measured almost solely by home runs and stolen bases, like only four players have ever hit 40 homers and stolen 40 bases in a season. Nowadays, with StatCast, there are numerous ways to measure the players that rank highly in both power and speed. First, we look at barrels and barrel rate. Barrels are any batted ball with a hit probability of 50% or better and an expected slugging percentage of 1,500 or better based on exit velocity, launch angle, among other factors. The leaderboard is basically a who's who of rocket blasters. Now, we can also tap into sprint speed, which is measured in distance covered in feet per second in the field or on the base pass, not confined to just trying to steal bases. Now, according to StatCast guru David Adler, in the first few weeks of the season, only four players in all of baseball rank in the 94th percentile or better in both barrel rate and sprint speed. Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, the Twins' Byron Buxton, and 23-year-old Marlins rookie Jazz Chisholm, whose barrel rate of 28.6% leads all of baseball, while his sprint speed of, oddly enough, also 28.6 feet per second ranks in the 94th percentile. We know Trout and Buxton can do it all, but don't sleep on the kid from the Bahamas.
And what that ball is.
It was a big week in the big leagues.
Who's up? Who's up?
I don't believe it! My, oh my!
Is it foul or is it fair? And now, from MLBBro.com, here's J.R. Gamble.
JR, the Yankees just snapped their five-game losing streak on Tuesday night. Before that, the Yankees were 5-10, off to their worst start since 1997. Is it foul or fair to say that the Yankees are figuring things out and will be serious contenders for the division crown when it's all said and done?
Fair.
It's a fair ball.
Baseball's panic over the Yankees' slow start is comical. What they don't tell you is that in 1997, the Yankees rebounded to win 96 games and take Cleveland to five games, losing 4-3 in the ALDS. So 97 isn't a bad barometer. The Yankees don't stink. No, they're not hitting, and they have a lack of timely hitting. They ranked 29th out of 30 teams in hitting going into Wednesday night's game. Who would have thunk it with all those high-priced boppers? The pitching staff, 7th in ERA, that's decent, but the defense is 27th ranked, and they have the 8th most errors in the league, so it's been all bad on those fronts. Still, it's way too early to panic. Any baseball fan knows this deep down. This isn't the 60-game COVID season. There's no rush. The Yankees have 146 games left. Hal Reynolds said it best on MLB Network. They're 5 games out of first place, but if they catch the ball and make routine plays, they're in the games. They cost themselves because the defense is lackadaisical. Pitchers want somebody to catch the ball. You do that, and everything will come around. He's a prophet. Because on Tuesday night, the Yankees did that and broke their five-game losing streak against a tough Braves team to take the opener of the two-game set. They did it with timely hitting, the homer by Urshela, and great pitching. They also had a bit of luck as the red-hot Ronald Acuna is out and day-to-day with an abdominal strain. But look for the Yankees to be right there in the end, same as in 97.
Turn money into more money.
Now it's time for Betting on the Bases with Dave Gascon.
Love that money. Love that money.
Rob, I'm not going to lie. I have not had a losing week just yet in Major League Baseball. No plans on doing that anytime soon. Three teams I'm looking at over the weekend: Arizona, Pittsburgh, and Detroit. And the reason why, three worst pitching staffs in all of Major League Baseball. Diamondbacks are in Atlanta on Friday night for their weekend series. They'll take on Kyle Wright and the Braves, who need to find a way to get over 500. And they'll do so against Luke Weaver and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Take the Braves straight up in that ball game. Also, Minnesota taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates in the Twin Cities. Pirates are bringing up Trevor Cahill in this ball game. He's got an 0-2 record. ERA is over 9 at 9.69. I'm taking the home team, the Twins, in that affair as well. And then we jump Saturday and we go right to Sunday. A great matchup between Anaheim and Houston, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of course. I'm taking the over in that ball game. Angels continue to swing the bat well. Lance McCullers versus Dylan Bundy in that pitching matchup. Pound the over. That's it. Got to make some cash. I'm out.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto: if I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
All right, now let's welcome to the podcast David Vasse. He is the Dodger reporter for AM 570 LA Sports here in Los Angeles. David, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Rob. Appreciate it.
No doubt. Let's talk about those Dodgers who are off to an incredible start, 14-4. And some people are already writing that they could set the all-time win record. Where are you on that, Dave? Is that possible with this roster?
You know, it's possible with the level of competition in the National League, Rob, but I'm not sure. You know, this pitching staff is so good. It is possible. I'm not going to say it's out of the question. But the Dodgers were approaching that Mariners record a few years ago. I believe it was in 2017. And that's not important to the Dodgers. They're more about the big picture to have their roster ready, healthy, and rested for October. So I don't believe that's something they're going to try to chase, even if it is in reach in September.
Dave, let's talk about Mookie Betts, who made an incredible catch to win a game in San Diego in Game 2 of that exciting three-game series. But he's injured. Give us an update on Mookie Betts.
Yeah, Mookie is supposed to be in the starting lineup for Thursday against the Padres. He had x-rays on his right forearm, Rob, and they came back negative. So that was a really huge sigh of relief for the Dodgers after he was hit by a pitch by Rafael Montero in the ninth inning of that game. So that was really the Dodgers dodged a bullet in more ways than one, because if there's one guy they can not afford to lose for any extended period of time is Mookie Betts, especially with Cody Bellinger on the injured list right now. So he is going to be back in the lineup, according to Dave Roberts, on Thursday.
Dave, the guy that I think tipped the scales for the Dodgers when they signed Trevor Bauer, the free agent, Cy Young Award winner coming over from the Reds. He's been tremendous to start the season. Talk about his addition. And is the sky the limit for this guy with this Dodger offense? I think he can win the National League Cy Young again. What do you say?
Yeah, I would say so. After the way he's pitched in the first three or four outings of this season, Rob, there's no doubt that he's very much in contention to do it again. And he is part of this Dodger rotation, to me, that has given them the best record in baseball. It's not their offense. It's not their bullpen. It's their starting rotation that has really helped the Dodgers get off to this great start. You go from Bauer to Buehler to Kershaw to Urias, and also giving Dustin May the opportunity to grow in this rotation as he learns on the job. I think it's going to be really the rotation that keeps the Dodgers afloat all season.
Our guest here on Inside the Parker is David Vasse, the Dodgers reporter for AM 570 LA Sports in Los Angeles. And Dave, I don't think this is an overstatement. I watched all the games, but that Padres-Dodgers series last weekend in San Diego felt like a playoff atmosphere, especially that Friday night game that went into extra innings. Am I being over the top with it, or was there something to it?
No, it was a great series, Rob. It's a great three-game series, and it was one of those few things that lived up to the hype. And you don't usually see that when everybody's hyping it up. And this series is going to be a rematch of everything that we saw in that three-game series with the starting rotation because of May and Musgrove going on Sunday, Snell and Bauer getting round two and starting it off with Buehler and David Weathers. By the way, the Padres lost one of their best starting pitchers in Nelson Lamet, so that was a big loss for them.
Who's the best player in baseball? Is it Mike Trout or is it Mookie Betts?
Mookie Betts has been one of the stars. It's been the Mookie show ever since he got here, Rob. That catch on Saturday night is just indicative of his preparation, his athleticism, and his baseball IQ. He doesn't make that catch without getting a great jump off the bat. So for me, Mookie Betts by far is, I know everybody's talking about Mike Trout and Ronald Acuna Jr. Acuna Jr. is a great player, so is Mike Trout. But for me, Mookie Betts has come up time after time in big moments, and I would say that he's the best player in baseball for me, hands down.
Last thing, Clayton Kershaw, is there a chance that he re-signs with the Dodgers and comes back to finish his career, or could this be possibly his last season in L.A.?
It's possible, Rob, but I don't see him pitching in any other uniform. I thought there was a chance he might leave a couple of years ago because he really wasn't buying into the analytics from Andrew Friedman and then started to buy into it. And he saw that the success they were able to have, he never was into just measuring players by numbers and making decisions off of that. He can live with it right now. They just won the World Series. His family loves it here. I don't see him going anywhere. You know, everybody talks about the Rangers, but they haven't gotten any better, even though they've gone into that new stadium. So I can't see him playing for a 90-loss team. I don't care how close it is to his house. And it feels like the Dodgers and their ownership loves him so much and understands the legacy that they would not allow him to go anywhere else. But it'll be interesting to see what kind of agreement they can come to, because he's not a $35 million a year pitcher.
No doubt. All right, there it is. Thanks for the knowledge, Mr. David Vasse, Dodgers reporter, AM 570 LA Sports in LA. We appreciate you, Dave. We'll see you down the road, buddy.
Okay, Rob, thanks a lot. Appreciate you having me on. Great as always.
Batter up!
It's Jones in for Baseball. A fan's take on the game we love.
You're out!
Hello, everyone. This is Jones, MLB bro, content reporter. Today, I have a message for all Yankee fans. Chill. Yes, the Yankees are off to a rocky start, but let's not act like this never happened before. In 1997, they also started 5-10, and they ended up winning 96 games. Now, I'm not necessarily saying just because they rebounded in the past that history will repeat itself. All I'm trying to say is baseball is a marathon. They play 162 games. It's not a sprint. So let's let the season play out a bit. Let's get a larger sample size. I mean, we're not even 20 games into the season. So as of right now, chill. It's not time to panic.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA. And it isn't even close.
Reason number 995 why baseball is better than the NBA and the NFL. It's because it's a long season. You can't bury somebody or bury a team because the first two or three weeks weren't good. The Yankees are off to a terrible start. You think the season's over in the Bronx? No way, no how. The Red Sox got off to an 0-3 start and You know, the sky was falling on Chicken Little. Guess what? They ran off 9 straight wins. In some sports, in the NFL, you lose 4 or 5 games, the season's over. In the NBA, it doesn't take too much before you can run yourself out of contention. And of course, the seeding and where you finish can determine often if you're going to move on. So getting off to a horrendous start could put you in a hole that would be very difficult to get out. But baseball's played for 6 months every day virtually. There's so much baseball to be played, no matter how bad it is. And it's early. We're still in April. Fans don't have to be like, oh, this is it. This is going to be a long season. I don't want to watch. Teams can get hot, run off a ton of games, and get back in it. That's what makes baseball great. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. In the words of New York TV legend, the late Bill Jorgensen, thanking you for your time this time until next time. Rob Parker, out.
He can't get it. This could be an inside to Parker.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.